Oh, wow. It's time for Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.
Oh, those are some creaky mic noises there. I think that was coming from me. Sorry about that. How are you doing, Ellen?
Oh, yeah, I'm doing pretty good. The academic year is nearly ended. We have big exam tomorrow and then everybody's off. So, yeah.
Well, especially for you guys at AUT, at least. We've still got like another month of...
Yeah, well, it just means we can get onto the research sooner, I guess. I don't know. But, yeah, I think the kids will be glad that everything is pretty much done.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And hope for a better year next year.
I know. Hope for a more normal year next year. I mean, this year's just been absolutely crazy with respect to the whole teaching stuff and everything. And the kids have sort of been sort of the meat and the sandwich there. And hopefully everything returns to normal. Face-to-face lectures, you know, real exams. Get rid of all of this Zoom stuff and everything, but yeah, we'll see.
We'll wait and see.
Yeah.
All right, well, coming up with our first story we have today is about James Randi. Now, I feel quite ashamed that I have never actually heard of him. I didn't know who he was, but so could you fill us in for maybe other people out there like me don't know who he is and what he's known for?
Well, that's the sad thing, is that I think there are an awful lot of people out there who've never actually heard of him. And I describe him as being a great person of science, even though he was in fact a conjurer. That's what he called himself. We would perhaps call him a magician, but he liked to call himself a conjurer. So he was a Canadian guy, born in 1928, and he sort of started off doing all your sort of magic tricks and stuff like that, and he was an escapologist, so apparently he was dangled over Niagara Falls in a straitjacket, and he got out of that, you know, like your Harry Houdinis and all that sort of stuff. And in fact, he did such things as organising Alice Cooper's stage shows. So, you know Alice Cooper?
Ooh.
No. Alice Cooper was big in the 70s. He was sort of a shock rocker. He was sort of, what's that guy's name? He was sort of the precursor of Marilyn Manson, I guess, sort of thing. The 70s version of Marilyn Manson. And he used to do mock executions on stage. So he used to get this James Randi guy to do all this sort of stuff. And he also held the world record for lying naked on a slab of ice, 43 minutes and 8 seconds. So
no mean feat. But I guess the interesting thing is then how he used his knowledge of these conjuring tricks to kind of fight misinformation.
Misinformation and ignorance. Okay, so again, there was a guy by the name of Yuri Geller. Now, did you know who he is?
Well, after reading the article, I do.
So again, he was big in the 70s. He was big because he bent spoons. That was his big claim to fame. And he could hold a spoon in his hand and then it would just sort of bend and fall apart and blah, 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 blah. And he was feted all around the world for this. They loved him. They thought he was great. They thought he was a psychic, all of that sort of stuff. And all he was just a magician. And so James Randi sort of exposed him one time on Johnny Carson's show, The Tonight Show in the States, which, you know, very highly watched show. He organized it so that Yuri Geller couldn't use his special spoons and things like that he was going to do all these tricks with. And he ended up looking, you know, a complete dick, basically, on TV. If you want to watch that, it's on YouTube. It's well worth a watch. But basically what Randi did, he spent the latter years of his life debunking all of these sorts of things. So your ESPs, your paranormals, your psychic phenomena, your homeopathy, your televangelists, you know, stuff like that. And he wasn't a trained scientist, but he was certainly a person of science. So he got Geller, he basically made Geller look a complete fool, and he wrote a book about Geller, and there were lots of lawsuits and blah, 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 but Geller eventually sort of fell out of the public limelight. He then turned his attention to this odious, odious, odious man by the name of Peter Popov, who was a televangelist in the States, who would hold these big, you know, sort of 10,000 people meetings and stuff like that, these healing meetings, and he would pick people out of the audience. He'd say, oh, your name is such and such, and you live at such and such a place, and God has told me that you've got arthritis and blah, blah, blah. And Randi figured out that all that they were doing was he was wearing an earpiece and his wife was busy sort of feeding him information over the earpiece and, you know, making it look like it had come from God and everything. And so he eventually got him sort of basically off the airwaves, which is good. The guy was making about $4 million a year, apparently, and this was in the 80s, and that was a lot of money then. So, also, if you've heard of McDonnell Douglas, the big aircraft corporation, so one half...
I'm feeling very ignorant.
I'm feeling very old. so he donated $500,000 to a university in the States for psychic research. And James Randi sort of went to the guy and said, look, you know, be very careful with your money because you could easily be fooled because, you know, a lot of the stuff is just sort of magicians and stuff. And he was sort of poo-pooed, so they didn't take his advice. They continued on with this, so they endowed this $500,000 to the university. They studied this ESP stuff and everything, and they found these two guys that just seemed to have this ESP and everything, and they were just about to go into print with all of their amazing results on psychic phenomena and everything. And then Randi confessed that he had planted these two guys in the experiment, and they were in fact amateur magicians and blah, 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 and they knew how to fool everybody. So it sounds like quite a negative sort of thing that he's going around sort of debunking people and stuff like that, but he was doing a great service to humanity, really. He was exposing frauds and cheats and people who would use science in the advance of ignorance and try and make their beliefs sound plausible by using big words, big scientific words and stuff like that.
And I guess that's kind of why you chose this story as being relevant, especially today, I guess, in this age of...
Oh, God. Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, we need him more than ever nowadays. He is all over YouTube. If you search for James Randi, R-A-N-D-I, he started a thing called the James Randi Educational Foundation, where he would offer $1 million to anybody who could show... sort of psychic phenomena under controlled conditions, okay? And that was done in 1996. He finished that in 2015 because nobody had taken up on it, and obviously, you know, nobody had ever won it. So he was also great, if you watch his YouTube videos, he was also famous for taking overdoses of homeopathic sleeping pills every talk that he would give. So, and, you know, just stuff like that, just debunking all of this. I hesitate to even call it pseudoscience because the word science shouldn't be associated with it. But he was a great person of science. He did wonderful things. And I really would encourage you, if you haven't heard his name, go to YouTube now, today, tonight, whatever, and just listen to him speak, because he's extraordinarily erudite, very, very sensible man. And it will be very, very entertaining and interesting for you all. So,
and for those who are listening, I don't think we actually covered this at the beginning, but the reason we are talking about him today is because he did just recently pass away, aged 92.
He did, so. yes. And, and the last interesting thing, he came out at the age of 81, and he survived by his husband. So, yeah, wonderful guy. I was actually lucky enough when I was in the States to see him talk, so, you know, that's why I kind of, I guess, have a thing for him. He's just brilliant.
Did he work any magic into his speech?
Oh, yeah. No, all fantastic stuff. So, please check him out.
All right, well, let's move on to our second topic then, because this is a very exciting discovery, which may be kind of concerning. We didn't know about this before, but there's a new organ in our body.
Yep. Who would have thought that the entire human body had not yet been discovered? I think this is absolutely incredible. So there's a 4-centimetre long part of the human body that nobody knew existed until last month. And that, to me, is amazing. And even more amazing, it was discovered totally by accident. So here's the story. So there's a bunch of scientists in the Netherlands, and they were actually studying prostate cancer, of all things. And the way that they were studying prostate cancer was by using a special drug. And this drug would bind to, proteins, or a protein that occurs in prostate cancer cells. Okay? And this drug can then be observed using PET and CT scans, so positron emission tomography and CT scans. And so what this allows you to do is actually see these cells in the body, okay? So they're looking for, or they were looking for, metastasized prostate cancer cells in the body, which is why they ended up looking at the head of some patients. So they were doing, obviously, full body scans. Now, the method that they were using to image these prostate cancer cells was also really, really good for imaging your salivary glands, okay? So your salivary glands in your jaw, under your tongue, and they, as the name suggests, are glands that produce saliva, okay? And then that makes it easy for us to chew, etc., 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 you know? And what they found, to their utter amazement, was in the back of the nose, in a place called the nasopharynx region, they found that they were imaging a particular organ. It was about 4 centimeters long, and nobody knew it was there before. Nobody had ever seen this. So the method that they were using, as I say, looking for these prostate cancer cells, also managed to image these salivary glands beautifully. And they then found, they did a study of 100 patients because they thought something must be wrong, injected them with this drug, and all of them showed the presence of this particular gland sort of in the back of your nose. And that strikes me as utterly, utterly astonishing. Given its size, I mean, it's 4 centimeters in length. It's not the sort
small.
Of, it's not the sort of thing that you'd think you'd miss.
Yeah.
And, you know, God knows how many heads and stuff have been dissected over, you know, thousands of years by humanity, and they've missed it all. So this was just published last month in a journal called Radiotherapy and Oncology. And, you know, an amazing discovery, absolutely extraordinary. And the question then becomes, right, so, okay, so we've got this new organ, why should we care?
Mm-hmm.
Well, especially if you're undergoing treatment for cancer, generally oncologists and their like hesitate to use radiation sort of anywhere near the head or anywhere near your salivary glands in particular, because you then run the risk of damaging those, and that then means that it's very, very difficult to chew, it can be difficult to talk and stuff like that. So you're looking at avoiding those salivary glands. Now people are going to know that, you know, if you are looking at irradiating the head, now you've got some other salivary glands to worry about as well. So you're going to avoid sort of the back of the nose and stuff like that. So just utterly incredible, utterly amazing to think that in this day and age we'd find something new in the human body. Incredible.
Yeah, maybe there'll be more to come. Hopefully not.
Yeah, you got to wonder, don't you? Yeah.
Well, and then with the last few minutes remaining, we might cover off some zeptoseconds.
Indeed.
The shortest interval of time ever recorded. Mm. I mean, so how long is a zeptosecond?
A zeptosecond is 10 to the minus 21 of a second, okay? Which is a thousandth of a millionth of a millionth of a millionth of a second.
Which very is, fast.
Which is just crazy. And as you say correctly, that this is the shortest time interval that's ever been recorded. And in order to do this, obviously they need some very, very special kit to be able to do this. And the genesis of this goes all the way back to good old Einstein, as so many things do, who in 1905, his Annus Mirabilis, found a thing called the photoelectric effect, where that if you shine light onto atoms or molecules, provided the light's of the right frequency, it can kick out electrons.
Mm.
Okay, and so these guys were using this idea in a study of the hydrogen molecule, which is the absolute simplest possible molecule that you can get. It's just two hydrogen atoms that are stuck together with two electrons, and that's called a chemical bond that's holding them together, these two electrons. So what these researchers in Germany did was to shoot a single photon of light at a hydrogen molecule. Now what this photon did was to kick out not one electron but both electrons. So it would kick out one electron first, it would then travel to the second electron and kick that out as well a very, very, very short time later. Okay, now we're talking hydrogen molecules very, very small, so that photon doesn't have to travel very far between the first electron and the second electron to kick them both out.
How many zeptoseconds was that?
It was exactly 247 zeptoseconds. And the way that they did it was they used the fact that when an electron gets kicked out, it starts behaving like a wave. Okay, so the first electron gets kicked out and it behaves like a wave. The second electron gets kicked out, it behaves like a wave as well. And if you've ever thrown two stones into a pond and looked at the waves that emanate from that, you get a thing called interference. So some waves get bigger and some waves cancel each other out. And if you analyze the wave pattern, you can then basically figure out the time interval between the time it took to hit the first electron and the second electron. And that was 247 zeptoseconds.
So, no, yes, that's why they say the shortest ever recorded.
Yes. Yeah, of course, there are obviously shorter periods of time than that, but that's the shortest period of time that we have been able to measure using our scientific equipment. So utterly remarkable, and, you know, science is cool. It just is.
Yeah. Oh, thank you, Alan. I wanted to make a dorky kind of segue from this to say to everyone listening that we'll be back in a matter of zeptoseconds. I don't really set that joke up very well, though, but we will. Stick around. Everyone will be back after this.
Mind blown. That was Dear Science, thanks to MOTAT, Auckland's Museum of Transport and Technology.
More Auckland.